Hello and welcome to this Endo Life. I'm Jessica Duffin. I'm an endo warrior and endo health coach, and this podcast is all about living and thriving with endometriosis. As always, this podcast is here for educational purposes only. Please consult your medical practitioner before making any nutritional changes or bringing in any supplements. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my lovely sponsors at BU, and I wanted to tell you about their new bath bombs, which are naturally made and contain beautiful essential oils, and their peppermint and eucalyptus essential oils bath bomb is doing so well right now with the endometriosis community. They're getting loads of feedback about it. And, you know, if you love the patches themselves, you're going to love the bath bombs, because essentially it's the patch in a bath bomb. So, you know, if you're on your period or if you're in pain, you could have a bath with some of the bath bombs or one of them. I don't know, you could have multiple if you want. And then get out the bath, maybe rub in some CBD balm and put your patch on top, which is what a lot of people are feeding back that they're doing. So I would love to do that, but I don't have a bath, so I can't. But if you have a bath, then, you know, I think these new bath bombs could be a lovely way to help alleviate some of your pain. So if you'd like to check them out, you can go to BU, which is buonline.co.uk, and you can also order them from anywhere in the world on cultbeauty.co.uk, and they deliver worldwide. Today's episode is continuing with the theme of why some of your conditions may be worse in January, and today we're focusing on endometriosis. Before we get into it, this is a short episode where I'm giving you an overview of some of the ways that these things can affect people with endo. But it isn't an exhaustive list. In fact, each of these topic areas could really have their own episode with a deep dive into how the science works in regards to hormones, inflammation, liver function, and so on. But rather than overwhelm you with a bunch of science, I am keeping in what you need to know and have linked to some further resources if you want to learn more. Additionally, the strategies I am suggesting are very much top line suggestions. But if you go to last week's episode and listen from 14 minutes in, I give a much more detailed breakdown of how to make these changes in that episode, and I've linked to that in the show notes. Finally, you're going to hear today mainly about dietary and lifestyle choices that can influence our endo and that we may have been more prone to in December. However, I want to be really, really clear here. Endometriosis is not your fault. I wish you could enjoy more sugar, alcohol, whatever it is you love over December without it flaring up your conditions. It's my belief, and really it's taught in our training, that's where my belief comes from, that the one-offs are really not as important as your daily consistent choices. And so if you choose to indulge a bit at Christmas or at a hen do or a birthday or whatever it is, I really want you to enjoy that, because my focus is actually on the day in, day out habits of your lifestyle and nutrition. And those are much more important than a single month of the year like December. But having said all of that, the reality is that certain foods and lifestyle choices can and do raise inflammation, affect hormones, and so on. And this can mean an increase in endo symptoms come January. That doesn't mean you should listen to this episode and scold yourself. Absolutely not. The point of this episode is to help you understand why you may be feeling worse, so that instead of panicking that your endo has suddenly grown overnight or that something is drastically wrong, you can maybe have a bit more of a sense of control, because why it's happening is now clearer to you. You can then make informed choices to improve your symptoms, because you now know what to change. This also doesn't mean that next December you can't have a bit of sugar or a sip of alcohol. But if you want to learn ways to counteract the effects of some of these festive foods next year, I have several episodes from December 2023 about how to enjoy the season and look after your endo, and the links to those episodes are in the show notes as well. All right, so now we've addressed those issues, let's look at why your endo symptoms may be worse in January. Number one, lack of sleep raises inflammation levels and pain signals. So many of us come out of December feeling sleep deprived. And even though that's common and may seem normal, given the heightened activity and social demands of the season, it's not great for our health. We all know the importance of good sleep, but for many of us with endometriosis and chronic conditions, the impact of sleep deprivation can be felt more acutely. It's widely understood that inflammation is one of the key drivers of growth and pain with endometriosis. What you might not know is that lack of sleep actually causes a rise in inflammation, which could result in more pain and endo-related symptoms. To compound the problem, research shows that sleep deprivation decreases natural pain relievers in our brain, like dopamine, and makes us more sensitive to pain. So already, we can see why endo may be worse come January. But have you noticed yourself feeling worse about it too? So actually how you feel about it emotionally. Lack of sleep has been shown to worsen feelings of anxiety and depression, which can cause us to further panic about our symptoms if they're worsening this month. The problem is, however, that psychological stress, like depression and anxiety, make the brain feel unsafe, which causes it to turn up the volume on pain because it's looking for any threat possible, which may be the cause of the unsafety. If you want to understand how this works, I've attached a link to another episode with Christy Weepy, who shares exactly how pain is produced. Number two, sugar raises inflammation levels. So moving on to sugar, that is our favorite indulgence of the holiday season for many of us. As you've probably learned by now, listening to my podcast over the years, sugar and the resulting blood sugar spikes raise inflammation levels in the body, which in turn, especially when repeated, can heighten pain levels. It's one of the reasons why I don't recommend tucking into sugar-laden comfort foods if you have pain on your period, which I assume you most likely do if you're listening to this. I mean, you most likely have pain, not that you most likely eat a ton of sugar on your period. You might, who knows? As increase in sugar when you're already in pain can make that pain worse. And that was a lesson that took me a long time to learn prior to training in endometriosis. If you want to learn what to eat on your period instead, that can also bring comfort. I don't know if it still exists on the internet. I do have an article on this. I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes. I'm all for eating comfort foods on your period. I just want us to be mindful of sugar consumption because I don't want you to be in more pain. So the other problem that can arise from excessive sugar consumption is hormonal imbalances. Repeated blood sugar level spikes can cause hormonal shifts in the body, which results in estrogen dominance and even decreased progesterone levels. And whilst estrogen dominance can come with its own set of symptoms like tender breasts, PMS, bloating, etc., it can also come with symptoms that look a whole lot like endometriosis, such as premenstrual cramping, painful periods, clots and heavier bleeding. Additionally, if you have elevated estrogen levels, especially if those estrogen levels are left unchecked because progesterone isn't high enough to keep estrogen under control, then we may find ourselves with more active endo, as endo is an estrogen-dependent disease for most of us. Now, quick side note, there is some research to suggest that this varies from person to person and that progesterone may have some influence in some cases, but the majority of research shows that endo is estrogen dependent. So if we have excessive estrogen or estrogen dominance, then we may have more active endo symptoms. Finally, just a little side note, lack of sleep also increases blood sugar instability and the likeliness of blood sugar spikes, which can of course worsen the effects of extra sugar we may have consumed over the holiday season. So if you're sleep deprived and you're eating more sugar, there's a bit of a double whammy going on there. Okay, next up, alcohol increases estrogen dominance. Now, I think many people typically increase alcohol in December, and I think that's a completely normal tradition that people partake in. But Alcohol can contribute to blood sugar instability. So everything I just said in regards to sugar also applies to alcohol. However, alcohol, especially when consumed regularly, can raise full body inflammation and cause inflammation in the gut. We know in terms of endo that gut inflammation and gut problems like leaky gut, which alcohol can contribute to, can worsen pain and inflammation in the pelvic area and may even be linked to the growth of endo due to certain types of toxins known as lipopolysaccharides, which escape through a leaky gut wall and enter the pelvic cavity. Again, this is a short episode, so we won't be deep diving into science of that here. But if you want to learn more about the gut endo connection, I've linked to a few resources in the show notes. Additionally, alcohol may cause estrogen dominance or excess and lowered levels of progesterone. In fact, research has linked alcohol to both of these scenarios, even with just moderate consumption. Your liver is responsible, in partnership with the gut, for removing waste and excess estrogen from the body. However, your liver will always prioritize toxins first, and that unfortunately includes alcohol. What happens in this case is that estrogen gets pushed to the back of the queue and continues to build up, and some of it will eventually be reabsorbed by the bloodstream, resulting in excess estrogen levels whilst the liver is busy working on alcohol. Another way that alcohol may raise estrogen is by increasing the conversion of testosterone into estrogen, which is how estrogen is made, by the way. Whilst research shows it can also suppress the production of progesterone, which leaves estrogen to go about and do its job without it being checked by progesterone. So, if you were drinking regularly or heavily during December, it's likely that your estrogen levels are a bit off, which can result in the scenario that I listed earlier of heavier bleeding, more cramps, more endo activity, etc. Just a reminder that this episode is sponsored by BU. These natural patches last for 12 hours, so they bring you prolonged relief and can begin working on relaxing your muscles before the pain kicks in, so you're prepared even if your period comes during the middle of the day. Some people even find that wearing them a night before their period can really help soothe the inflammation in the area. To shop, just head to the link in my show notes. Next on our list, which I think is number 4, is adhesion pain. This one may sound unusual, but if you're getting more pain and you were particularly active in December, like physically active with lots of dancing, running around Christmas shopping and general physical exertion, there's a chance you might be experiencing adhesion pain. Adhesions are web-like collagen structures that form after surgery or from endometriosis and other things like infections, etc. And unfortunately, if you've had a surgery for endo, it's very likely, based on the data, that you have some adhesions. Adhesions form from scar tissue, and they can attach ovaries to your bladder to your uterus, and so on. And the pressure and pain they cause can be extremely debilitating and can absolutely be mistaken for endo pain. The problem is that once adhesions are there, they can tug your body in certain ways and positions and can cause organs to be pulled in various directions, which can mean that if you then become particularly active, you may upset things because you're literally tugging on your organs. Does this mean you shouldn't have danced the night away on New Year's Eve? Absolutely not. But you may need to get these adhesions addressed so that you can dance and be social without pain in the future. Okay, my last point is that caffeine may increase estrogen levels. If you were drinking extra cups of cozy coffees, black tea, matcha, or hot chocolate across the cold month of December, then you likely increased your caffeine intake. This may or may not be a problem for you. It really depends on how your body responds to it. Research shows that for some, caffeine is anti-inflammatory, whilst for others, it's inflammatory. Now, you may be thinking, but isn't coffee, green tea, dark chocolate, etc. supposed to be really good for the gut and overall health? Yes, that's absolutely true, and it's why I love those. But you can still have these things without the caffeine by buying decaffeinated versions. Just look for coffee made with the Swiss water process, which uses water rather than chemicals to decaffeinate the beans. And if you're buying stuff like green tea, then look for organic versions. Again, it's going to use less kind of chemical laden versions to decaffeinate the leaves. Caffeine causing inflammation is especially true if you have IBS-D, which is IBS diarrhea type, as caffeine can trigger diarrhea and repeated diarrhea can inflame the intestines and cause further aggravation like cramps, etc. And as I mentioned earlier, inflammation in the gut can cause inflammation in the pelvic region and systemically throughout the body. Additionally, caffeine may increase your estrogen levels. So remember what I was saying about alcohol being prioritized by the liver? Well, it's a bit similar here with caffeine. So yes, caffeine will be prioritized by the liver, putting estrogen on the back burner, but there's more to it as well. Estrogen and caffeine are metabolized, which in simple terms just means detox from the body, using the same enzyme called CYP1A2. Some people have genetic differences, which means this enzyme doesn't work as well as it should. So if you're taking in a lot more caffeine and this enzyme is already having a hard time doing its job, you can see where a problem may arise with estrogen levels. The other issue with caffeine is that it triggers a flight or fight response by stimulating the production of cortisol and adrenaline. If you're being triggered into this state repeatedly on a daily basis or several times a day, this will eventually have an effect on your sex hormone levels. When the body or brain is stressed, your body believes you're not in a safe environment to conceive and will start suppressing ovulation, progesterone production, etc. Again, we could deep dive into the various ways that this works, but to keep this episode digestible, I'm going to leave it there and direct you to some further resources. But in short, repeatedly elevating your stress hormones can really screw up your hormones. Okay, so now you have more of an understanding as to why you may have more endo symptoms this month, I hope that it's maybe reducing your panic around whether your endo has suddenly got worse out of the blue. The chances are it will calm down again next month and the month after that and so on as you get back to your usual routines. But we can certainly do some things to support that to happen. So number one is to prioritize sleep. If you're chugging on the caffeine, reducing caffeine might need to come first before you can prioritize sleep, right? Because you're probably going to be wired. But if not, try building up to giving yourself a 9-hour sleep window. If you've been used to late nights or sporadic wake-up times, you'll likely need to make this a gradual process towards your ideal sleep-wake time, as your circadian rhythm, otherwise known as your sleep-wake cycle, will take some time to adjust and get into the routine. Try focusing on some very simple sleep hygiene strategies like dimming the lights and getting off screens at least an hour before bed. If you can't part with your screen, get some blue light blocking glasses, set your phone to night mode so it turns red. You can also get some apps for your laptop that will change the color and make it a little bit more sleep friendly, and turn down the brightness on all devices because the brightness is really going to be stimulating your brain. If you have trouble where you wake during the night, have a listen to the episode that I've linked in the show notes on this issue in particular. Next up is be mindful of sugar consumption. Try replacing sugary treats with dark chocolate, fruits, yogurt, etc., and healthy snacks. And try to keep sugar like maple syrup, honey, and table sugar to special occasions or a weekend treat. This may take a while to get used to because sugar is a very addictive substance, so you might need to do this gradually to prevent difficult withdrawals. Additionally, focusing on stabilizing your blood sugar, again, over time, you don't need to rush this process, that's going to just make it harder for you, will help you to crave sugar less, and I've linked to some resources for learning about blood sugar in the show notes. Next up is to reduce your caffeine intake if possible and if you feel it's affecting you. The best way to determine if you can tolerate caffeine would be to remove it for 1 month, see how you feel, and then reduce it and look for symptoms. Be mindful of noticing your tolerance levels too. So it might be that you can tolerate 1 cup, but not 2 or not 3. So when you reintroduce it, start very slowly with 1 cup a day and see how you feel, and then notice how you feel on 2 cups a day, etc. It's probably also worth separating your favorite caffeinated drinks and seeing how you respond to tea versus coffee. For me, tea messes me up. It really, really messes me up. But I can withstand coffee. But again, in very small amounts. I'm better off with like half caf, half decaf, one cup a day, that kind of thing. However, you really shouldn't jump into going decaf straight away, as it can really stress your body and you can get some pretty nasty withdrawals. So I suggest doing this gradually. And like I said at the start of this episode, have a listen to last week's episode for some tips and examples of how to do this. And that's the same for reducing sugar, changing your sleep routine. I've got much more detailed descriptions in the last episode. If you're pretty sure that you can metabolize caffeine well and it doesn't cause any inflammatory reactions, I do still encourage you to consume caffeine with a meal, which will help lessen the effects on your stress hormones and therefore your sex hormones. All right, next up, let's talk about alcohol. If you've increased your alcohol intake and you're looking to cut down, I've got some very detailed ideas on how to do that in last week's episode, and I've linked to that in the show notes. I also have some suggestions on how to lessen the burden of alcohol in episode 277. If you're not kind of going teetotal completely and you're keeping it in at the weekends or when you're socializing and you kind of just want to learn what you can do about that. Finally, adhesion pain may take some time to calm down, but what we want to do is bring circulation and the immune system to the area to help clear scar tissue. So this is where self-massage and things like castor oil packs can really help. Additionally, certain stretches and professional massages are really required to actually create some mobility in the area and break the adhesions down. And I've linked to an episode all about adhesion management strategies in the show notes if you want to deep dive into that. All right, so that's it for this week. I really hope that this has given you some hope that your endo isn't suddenly terrible out of the blue and that there is a reason, and that this has given you kind of, it's made you feel more empowered and it's given you some options to try and get your symptoms down. All right, I will see you next week. So if you found this episode helpful and you want to learn more about living well with endo, or you'd like some further help, I wanted to remind you of the resources I have available to you and how you can work with me if you'd like to. So I obviously have hundreds of these episodes for you to binge on, and I do have two free columns. So one on Endometriosis Net and one on Endometriosis News, and there are countless articles on there to help you thrive. You can also sign up to my newsletter for tips and updates. I have a digital cookbook and nutrition guide, This Endo Life, It Starts With Breakfast, which you can download for just $9.99. And if you want to go that step further, I have short and budget-friendly masterclasses in nutrition, surgery prep and recovery, and natural pain relief. I also have a DIY course, Live and Thrive with Endo, The Foundations, which you can sign up to at any time at a really affordable price point, and you have lifetime access to. So you can go at your own pace and literally look back at it years down the line. This four-module course will provide you with the most effective yet easy to digest tools and strategies to reduce your pain, fatigue, endo belly, brain fog, and hormonal symptoms, and allow you to live your life again. Each lesson includes the core foundational needle movers that I have seen work for my clients time and time and time again. You get all the essential information that you need to be endo without the overwhelm. Finally, you can apply to work with me one-to-one. This is my most advanced and personalized offer, so I only take a handful of clients. To find out the details and the application process, head to my coaching page. The links to all of these resources and ways to work with me are in the show notes. And finally, to help others find this podcast and reach as many people with endo as possible, please leave a review and please share with your friends and family and subscribe.